Lech Lecha, what a fascinating parsha. Obviously, every parsha is fascinating, but particularly when we start to talk about Avram Avinu and monotheism, so we really get Judaism cooking with gas, right? Until now, we've talked about Adam HaRishon, we talked about Noach, we talked about his kids. Now we're talking about Avram Avinu. He starts the parsha as Avram, and he ends the parsha as Avraham. So here you go with Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. Last year, did I talk about this last year? We talked about this last year from Reb Tzadok. That Reb Tzadok says, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. What a fascinating piece from Reb Tzadok. That usually, if you're going from somewhere, right, so the word is not Lech, but it's Tzei, right? Like, Tzei Me'artzecha. Leave your land. Tzei Mimoladcha. Leave where you're from. But here it says Lech. Go from where you're from. What does that mean, go from where you're from? Going is where you do what you do when you go somewhere. You go to something. So Reb Tzadok has this fascinating piece where we talked about the last year, so we're not going to focus on it this year, but a fascinating piece where he says that the lech, that the going, the process, the journey that Avram Avinu is going on is partially through what happened where he's from. Meaning that that everything he learned about what not to do in Terach's house, in the community of Avodah Zarah, that was part of the halicha. That was part of his journey. Part of his going was the fact that he learned what not to do in Terach's home. Very interesting, Rav Tzadok. But if we go to the Rashi on that phrase, Lech Lecha, the word Lecha means it's to you. So what's to you? We talked about this last year in the Tuesday afternoon class. What's Lecha? And what it was a decision that Avram Avinu had to make by himself, based on the Medrash. But you can listen to that class if you can find it from last year. Rashi says Lech Lecha lehana'ascha uletovascha. That it should be for you, and it's going to give you pleasure, and it's going to be good for you. So the obvious, or not obvious question, but a clear question from that that Rashi, those two words, seem to be redundant. Lehana'ascha, to your pleasure, uletovascha, to your goodness. It's going to be enjoyable, and it's going to be good. Well, isn't it always the case that if something is good, it's going to be enjoyable? If it's good, it's going to be giving you pleasure. So what does that mean? That it's lahanascha and lotavascha. So Rav Chanoch of Alexander explains, ki al pirov, says Rav Hanoch of Alexander, based on majority of people's decisions, lo kol hanaosav v'ta'anugosav shel adam heim lotavasav. Which is a beautiful reminder that not all pleasures and not all enjoyments in life are actually good for you. Which is an obvious point when you think about it in terms of the word pleasure, right? We're not always going to instinctively follow what we feel is good, what we feel is, you know, pleasurable, because that's not always the case, right? You don't give your kid chocolate all day or candy all day. You don't eat all that stuff all day because you know that even if it might bring you momentary pleasure, it's not going to give you long-term good. It's not going to be good. So says Rashi, not only will it be lahana ascha, not only will it be for your enjoyment, for your pleasure, but also letovascha. Going on this journey, going to Eretz Yisrael will be pleasurable, it'll be enjoyable. It'll be something that you actually, you know, feel, you know, a sense of satisfaction from, but it's also going to be good. It's not one of those satisfactions that are really, you know, are really masquerading as something detrimental to you. And while in the case of food and, you know, and other types of pleasures, we can readily understand why that's the case. I think it's a general rule that whenever we have something which makes us feel good, we always have to first check whether that good feeling is also good in the long term, even if it's not as explicit as something which is, you know, a fatty food or something like that. It's a good reminder from Rav Hanoch of Alexander that not all hanaos are letovos. So that's just first from Rav Hanoch on that implication from Rashi. But there's another piece from the Sfas Emes. about this line. The Sfas Emes mostly is quoted in a different way, which I actually had, you know, I was looking through my notes from last year. I had this in my notes as a possible thing to talk about in my drasha, but then I didn't talk about it in my drasha. And I also didn't talk about it for Pshischa. So I just never talked about it. So there's a well-quoted Sfas Emes and then a less-quoted Sfas Emes about Lach Lecha L'Anascha L'Tovascha. And that is that the Sfas Emes explains, and I think I've also seen a quote from the Chiddush Yerim, many times, as we've said, the Sfas Emes is really quoting his grandfather, the Chiddush Yerim, Yitzchak Meir Alter. So here the Sfas Emes explains that why is it that Rashi tells us, Lach Lecha L'Anascha L'Tovascha, what kind of test is that, right? We know that Avram Avinu went through many tests, as the Mishnah in Avos tells us. And we said, I think last week, I said in one of my classes last week, that the first test was what happened in Ur Kasdim, right? Being tested with the idols and being tested with Nimrod, having to walk through the furnace. That was his first big test. This is another big test. Can he go and sacrifice and move away from his parents, move away from his home to go to Eretz Yisrael? Says the Sfas Emes, wait a second, Rashi, you just told us, lahana'ascha ulatovascha, that it's going to be enjoyable, it's going to be pleasurable for Avram Avinu. You imagine if somebody would come to you and say, I know, listen, you've got to leave your home, but you're going to win the lottery. If you leave your home and you move over there, I'm going to give you the winning lottery ticket. It's going to be very pleasurable for you. So it might be a little bit of a sacrifice, but you're going to win the lottery. You're going to get pleasure from it. Rashi is telling us that Avram Avinu is being guaranteed by Hashem himself that he's going to get pleasure out of this journey. L'hanascha u'tovascha. You're going to get pleasure and it's going to be good for you. So what kind of test is that? So says the Sfas Emes, no, you don't understand. What Rashi is telling us is not what the test is. Rashi is not telling us this to say that that's the test. Rashi is telling us this to tell us that this is working in the opposite direction of the test. That we know later on, it's going to say, Vayelach Avram, Avram went, Kasher Diber Elav Hashem. Avram went just as Hashem told him to. Says the Sfas Emes, that's the test. Meaning that Avram Avinu didn't go on this journey to Eretz Yisrael because of the Hana or the Tova that he was going to get. He rather went, Kasher Diber Hashem. The only reason he went is because Hashem said so. Not because of the pleasure. So when Rashi says that Hashem tells you, by the way, Lech Lecha, this is going to be good for you, this is going to be a pleasure, this is going to be enjoyable for you, that was setting up the test. So that when Avram Avinu says, well, why should I go? Am I really going for the lottery ticket? Or am I going because Hashem told me to? And that was the test. Why is Avram really going? Is he going because he's going to get all this great stuff? Because the grass is greener on the other side, and it's going to be beneficial for me, and I'm going to get all this pleasure. Or is he going, Kasher Diber Elav Hashem? And the Pasuk tells us, two Pesukim later, that he went, Kasher Diber Elav Hashem, is specifically because Hashem said so. There's an interesting parallel to this by Rav Moshe Feinstein, has an interesting idea when it comes to Mamar Chazal, I believe at the end of Shmini. I quoted this between Mincha and Marav once last week. I forgot why. The Medrash says that if the Jewish people would have come out of Mitzrayim, and the only thing they would have gotten from that was that they didn't eat bugs, it would have been worth it. It would have been worth it that if the only Isser that they would follow is to not eat bugs, so that would have been all the worthwhile, that would have made it worthwhile for Hashem to take them out of Egypt. So Sfardim aside, who wants to eat bugs? Right? Who in the world wants to eat bugs? That's why Hashem would have taken them out of Mitzrayim, because they wouldn't eat bugs. Nobody wants to eat bugs. So everybody would be taken out of Mitzrayim. Says Rav Moshe, no, that's not the point. The point is not that they didn't eat bugs, because they didn't want to eat bugs. The question is whether they're going to not eat bugs, specifically because Hashem said not to eat bugs. Are you not eating bugs? This is a fascinating question. Are you not eating bugs because you don't want to eat bugs? Or are you not eating bugs because Hashem says not to eat bugs? That might sound like a silly question to you, but think about it in this way. Husbands out there, why do you take out the garbage? Are you taking out the garbage because it stinks? Or are you taking out the garbage because your wife told you to? And that's the question, right? Are you bringing flowers? Good job, Gil. Are you bringing flowers to your wife because you like the flowers? or are you bringing flowers to your wife because you know it'll make your wife happy? Meaning that our motivations, thank you, Gail, our motivate is... What, Shoshana?
Can't it be both?
Yeah, it can be both. It can be both. The question is what it's going to be ultimately. What's going to be ultimately is, you know, if you could set up a situation where one of them is not going to be, are you still going to do it? Right? That's really the basis of Nasa Venishma. Right? Nasa Venishma doesn't mean that we don't think about why the mitzvos are meaningful. Nasa Venishma means that before Nishma, we do Nasa. Meaning that ultimately, first and foremost, the reason we do a mitzvah is because Hashem said so. Afterwards, we can make it meaningful so that we can feel that it's something that we care about. But ultimately, it has to be Nasa first, right? And that's the key. The key is, are you doing it because Hashem said so first and foremost, or are you only doing it because you're getting pleasure out of it? So here, in the case of the bugs, in the case of Avraham Avinu here, it says the Fasemis, this is the more famous Fasemis about this, that the Fasemis says that Rashi is setting up the test. He's not outdoing the test, he's setting up the test. Hashem is telling Avraham Avinu, this is going to be pleasurable for you. But nonetheless, when it comes to actually going on the journey, Hashem, the pasuk says, "Kasher diber ilav Hashem." Avram did it just like Hashem said to do it, not because of the hana, not because of all the enjoyment and pleasure or the lottery ticket that's going to be laden for him on the other side. He might have enjoyed that afterwards. Point well taken from Shoshana. He might have well enjoyed all those hanos and all those tovos when he got to Eretz Yisrael, but that's not why he did it ultimately. Ultimately, he did it kasher diber ilav Hashem, like Hashem said so. Let's go back to Rav Hanukkah of Alexander for a second. Last year, we quoted Rav Hanukkah of Alexander. I'm trying to see if I have the sefer here. I don't. You'll have to trust my memory on this one. You can check the tape on this one too. That we quoted from the Ma'ayana Shel Torah or Ma'ayana Shel Torah that Rav Hanukkah of Alexander explained the difference between Avram Avinu and Yitzchak Avinu, and I forgot who asked the question last year. One of you asked the question last year about Avram Avinu versus Yitzchak Avinu. We say in the pasuk, "Es hanefesh asher asu b'charan," that Avram Avinu and Sarah Imenu, right? Avram helped convert all the men. Sarah helped convert all the women, and they brought es hanefesh asher asu b'charan. I'm planning on talking about this between Mincha and Ma'ariv Shabbos Day about what the ramifications of this pasuk are for converts nowadays. Sorry for I don't think we've had one woman come between Mincha and Ma'ariv on Shabbos Day since we've started the quick 20-minute cheer in between. You'll have to get the report afterwards from your husbands that hopefully will come. But the question we had last year was, what happened to all these converts? Right? When the Jewish people go down to Mitzrayim at the end of Sefer Bereishis, right? It says, B'shivim nefesh, as we say in the Haggadah, B'shivim nefesh yardu avazenu Mitzrayim. That's actually in Kisava, but 70 people went down. Oh, that's true. Thank you, Evan. Sarita was there once a couple weeks ago. That's true. 70 Jews went down to Egypt. 70 Jews. But then when you look at the list of the 70, they're all relatives. None of them are converts from outside the family. So where exactly do these converts come into the picture? Where'd they go? So Rav Hanukkah of Alexander explains in the Me'ena Shel Torah, he explains it this way, or at least that's how they quote him as explaining it, that when it comes to Avram Avinu, they were all brought into the world of Judaism through chesed, through ava, through a type of enjoyment of what Judaism can bring them. All of a sudden Yitzchak came. Yitzchak was no longer chesed, he was gevura. Yitzchak was the counter to Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu was Ava, and Yitzchak is Yira. Yitzchak is the person, as I wrote about on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, Yitzchak was the person who was able to withstand hardship, right? Avram Avinu puts him on his Mizbeach, and it still says, the Pasuk says, Vayechu Shneim Yachtav, he went willingly to go be sacrificed, right? He's the one who says, I have to do it, even if it's difficult. And all the converts didn't like that. Right, the converts didn't like that mentality. They liked Avram Avinu's perspective. They liked Avram Avinu's type of Judaism, where everything was about chesed and feeling good and being treated nicely. And Yitzchak was saying, "There's a lot to be responsible for. It's a serious religion. It's not just a religion of being nice, or being comfortable, I should say." Here, however, in this Sefer, this is the Iture Torah, so it quotes the same Rav Hanafa Alexander, but in a different way. And it's connected, but I think there's a very important lesson in it. He says, Avram Megayrus HaNashim, Asar Megayrus HaNashim, Ra'ir Lehem Lo'osim Agerim Achar Kach, La'an Ne'alamu. Where did these converts, where did they disappear to? El Achar Sheniftar Avram, after Avram passed away, Lo Ratu Lilmon Meyitzchak. They didn't want to learn from Yitzchak. I explained because he had a different approach to Judaism. But here he says, they didn't give credence to Yitzchak as the new leader. They didn't give him the same credibility that they gave to Avram Avinu. Nisharu efo b'li Rebbe Umanhig. And then, because of that, they lost the leader, they lost their guy, they lost their Rebbe. V'lo hayo lehem hemshech, they had no continuation. They didn't pass on the baton. Ki nifsak hama'agen v'chazu l'suram. Hama'ayan, the spring had cut off, and then they went back to their old ways. Mikan, and this is where we learn from this, she'al yomar adam ki hamanik ha'tzadik she'biyamav, eino gadol kol kach kmo kodmav. Never say that the leaders of the previous generation were the leaders of the previous generation were less than the ones in this generation, or were more than this generation. Meaning, you always have to take what you have, you have to take the leadership that you have. Yes, Yerachmiel, there is a concept of that they went to China, but we're not going to talk about that right now. But it is interesting, I've heard that before, and I've heard academic sort of takes on it. But the point is that the people who were part of Avram Avinu's Yiddishkeit couldn't accept Yitzchak Avinu. They just didn't like him as much. And therefore they said, okay, we're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. If we don't have our Rebbe, so then we're gonna leave him too. This is paralleling also, unfortunately, what the Jewish people did by the Egel Azav. What the Jewish people did when Moshe Rabbeinu was gone for too long, what did they say? Kizem Moshe Ha'ish Lo Yadam Mahayolo. Right, we don't know what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. Instead, let's make something new. If we don't have our Rebbe, if we don't have the one person that taught us how to do all this stuff, so then we're out with it, right? We don't want it anymore. And that's exactly what happened here. According to Rav Hanukh of Alexander, the issue wasn't necessarily that they had different approaches, although that could have been behind it. It was the fact that they didn't have their original Rebbe. So we always have to make sure that we're not only thinking about the Alterheim, right? You know, there's a tendency to always be nostalgic. You know, Lahavdil, a lot of Havdalos, you have sports fans that grew up with Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, you know, the heyday of NBA basketball. And then all of a sudden, they can't appreciate, all of a sudden, LeBron James is no good. And James Harden is no good. I happen to believe that James Harden is also no good, but not because he wouldn't have been good in the times of Larry Bird. Right? Different generations have different superstars. Isaiah Thomas. Yeah, sorry. I always leave out Isaiah Thomas. I have to start including Isaiah Thomas in my analogies now that I'm here. But either way, but you got my point, right? There's always sort of like this nostalgia, like, oh, the players back then were so good, and nowadays they're so much worse. There's a lot less hand-checking, and they call a lot more fouls, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to a Rebbe, when it comes to who you have, so you can't be so nostalgic to think that you don't have a good Rebbe nowadays. There was no hemshech for the people of Avram Avinu to the extent that they therefore rebelled against Judaism and they went back because they didn't have their Avram Avinu. And really what they should have done is recognize who they had in Yitzchak, recognize who their leadership was in the moment, instead of saying he's not the same thing as it once was. Because when you do that, you're going to lose out on the ultimate prize, which is being an Oved Hashem as you're supposed to be. Something to think about also in terms of how we relate to our Judaism and maybe teachers we've had. You know, I've heard from people, I've heard from people locally that there was this rabbi who used to live here, there was this rabbi who used to be at this place, and I always used to go to his shiur, but ever since then, I've never found a good teacher, and that's why I don't go to shiurim anymore. That's why I don't learn Torah anymore. That's a terrible thing to say. Because while it might be a backhanded compliment to whoever you're talking about, what it basically means is that you've given up on your Judaism, and it was really about that person and not about Torah and not about Hashem in the first place. So there's what to be said for that. obviously, I don't think there's a lot of, maybe not obviously, but I've not heard a lot about that from inside of our shul or inside of the community, but I have heard that sentiment before, and it's something to watch out for, to always strive to reconnect in different ways and not just give up because you don't have the previous connections you once had. Here's an interesting idea from Rav Simcha Banim, and I actually did a little, I did a little research to actually find this for a simple one because I have this this sefer here is really it's little snippets. You see here the very two line things where it just gives you the idea. It's great for drushas, but it's not great for really getting the point about what they're trying to say. I've never heard this before, and it's going to sound a little dicey. That's what I say. It's going to sound a little politically incorrect. But hopefully you'll understand what he means when he says it. I'll try to explain it in my own way so that it comes across okay. Avram Avinu is going down to Mitzrayim. And we're running out of time, I know. I'm speaking too much. But Avram Avinu is going out down to Mitzrayim. And as we know, he's afraid that they're going to take Sarah. Or at that point, Sarai. So he says, instead, that Kiru Osach HaMitzrim V'Hargu Osi, they're going to kill me. Vosach yichayu, and they're going to let you live. Think about this for a second. And this is not explained here, but he references it here in the longer version. What's another time that Egypt targeted the men and not the women? Right in the beginning of Shmos. Right, exactly, Michael. When they say Kol Haben Hayilo Laor Tashlichu, right? That they should throw all the boys in the river. Right, we talk about this in the Haggadah also. That they're only killing the men, whereas and Lavan was trying to law, of course, Kol. Fine. But what's interesting about this is it's exactly the same thing. It's the same Egypt who's now targeting the men instead of the women. So listen to this, Rav Simcha Banim. I was shocked, and you can see I mark off the pieces that I find particularly meaningful. And you see here, I marked it off, and then I put a question mark next to it because I don't know what he's talking about. So I'm just going to read you the words, and then I'll explain it the way I think he means. So he says, "Va'osach yichayu kol ritzonam shel hamitzrim hu levatel es koach ha'hashpa." The whole will of Egypt was to get rid of hashpa, meaning influence, active influence, bivchinas zachar, which is itself represented by the male species. Ulehit dabek bivchinas nekeva. They would rather connect to the attribute of a female, hamikabeles ve'ena mashpia. The woman who accepts and doesn't actively give over, right? This is obviously talking biologically, anatomically, that the man is the one that gives and the woman that is the one which receives. Hamikabelas v'ena mashpia v'hargu osi v'osach yichayu. Avram Avinu is saying that they want to kill the nature of man, which is the nature of influence, of proactivity, of doing things, being taking initiative, and they would rather people be passive. They'd rather people be on the receiving end. And this is something which I think is very it sounds kind of dicey, but what I think it actually means is that Egypt was trying to maintain a power structure, maintain a structure where from the top down they will dictate what everybody else should do, and everybody else just has to accept it. But if you have people in the population that are willing to take initiative to work against the status quo, so that's going to threaten the power dynamic. So what I think Rav Simcha Banim is saying is that they prefer that people be passive, that people just accept what they're saying, and they're trying to destroy the sort of the, what he calls the man attribute, which is the proactivity, the influence, the initiation, the people that want to do their own things, right? Men are always power grabbing, right? They're always trying to exert their own control over situations. At least that's sort of the prototype of man, right? So that's what Simcha Benim is saying, that the Mitzrim are trying to undo. They don't want anyone to work against them. And as Rav Hirsch explains, when it says in the beginning of Shmos, Vayaka Melech Chadash Al Mitzrayim, that a new king came up, it meant that there was a coup. I don't know if you've ever seen this Rav Hirsch, maybe we could talk about it later, but that there was a whole uprising against Paro in Egypt, and that's how the new establishment came to be, that forgot that Asher Lo Yada Az Yosef, because it was a completely new administration. It was a completely new government, which had overthrown the previous one. And that was the whole thing that Paro was trying to prevent, which is people to uprise against them. So this is somehow what I think it's meaning, but I would take it on a spiritual sense as well. In a spiritual sense, we always have to make sure that we're always being proactive about our Judaism. I wrote about it for my drasha for Keseitzei L'machal Mal Alevecha before the tshuva season. You have to be proactive and go out and figure out what you have to be better at, as opposed to being passive and waiting for it to creep up on you. When it comes spiritually, as we know, Mitzrayim was a place of Avodah Zarah. What's Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah is the concept where you basically say, this inanimate object is doing all the heavy lifting. They're taking care of everything. You know other religions where the powers that be are taking care of everything behind the scenes, and the personal responsibility is much less. So that's what Mitzrayim was trying to create spiritually, not just practically, like I just explained, but spiritually, for them, it was much more about being passive than it was about being proactive. That for us, for Jews, when we go through, we have to be proactive about doing things, as opposed to just being passive about letting things happen to us. And in our own Judaism too, this, according to Reb Simcha Bonim, is what Avram Avinu was saying to Sarah, leaving the male-female dynamic out of it, that we have to maintain our proactive nature and make sure that they don't kill off that perspective or that approach to Judaism. So a lot of heavy thoughts tonight from Henoch of Alexander. I had more things to say, believe it or not, that we didn't get to, but about Lech Lecha, about making sure that our Hana'a, which is also Latova, that all the pleasures that we're getting are also good in the long term. They're not just fleeting and rewarding in the short term. But then also from the Sfas Emes, that when we have those pleasures, even from Judaism, we make sure that ultimately we're doing it because Hashem said so, or our spouse said so, not because we enjoy it. And that's what really builds a relationship. And then we just said from Avram Avinu that we have to make sure we maintain that proactive approach to Judaism and not just be passive in saying that whatever we have to do, that's what we'll do, and not taking the initiative ourselves. Okay, a lot to chew on, a lot to think about, and we only got through really the first aliyah of the Parsha. There's a lot more in the Parsha that we could have gotten to, but you'll have to look through that yourself. We're over time, believe it or not, and hopefully we'll see you at another class soon, not for Shabbos itself. Okay, everyone should have a good Shabbos.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good Shabbos, guys. Shabbos.
I will say that I might have been named after Isaiah Thomas. Rumor has it. My father likes to say it. Not the current Isaiah Thomas, the original. Hamavin Yevin. Anyways, everyone should be well. Good Shabbos.